for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Natural gas has been touted as a cleaner, cheaper, abundant alternative to coal and oil. Extracting it from dense shale formations offers the possibility of jobs and money for struggling communities. But it's also created environmental concerns. Independent filmmaker Josh Fox joins us from NPR's New York Bureau. Good morning to you, Josh.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Josh has an award-winning documentary titled Gasland. It premieres on HBO tonight. Here with me in the studio, Mike Sorahan. He's an energy reporter for END Publishing. Good morning to you, Mike.
Good morning to you.
And C. Boyden Gray. He's a founding member of the Energy Future Coalition. He's former U.S. ambassador to the European Union and special envoy for Eurasian energy diplomacy. Boyden Gray, it's good to see you.
Thank you.
And throughout the hour, I'll look forward to hearing from all of you. 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Let me say at the outset, I have a very personal interest in this story. My husband and I own property in Pennsylvania in the Marcellus Formation. So I want to make sure everyone knows that. Josh, tell us why you got started on this story.
Well, I got started making the film Gasland. Originally, I had no intention of making a film. I've never made a documentary before. My family and I were asked to lease our land in the Upper Delaware River Basin, and that's in Pennsylvania, very close to the New York border. And we have about 19.5 acres, and we were given an offer that had a signing bonus attached to it of about $100,000. In order to drill for natural gas into the Marcellus Shale on our land. And it's, you know, it's a pristine watershed area. It's part of an interconnected watershed system, which includes the New York City watershed, which gives water to about 16 million people. It's a beautiful area. So I was suspicious, and I was hearing from the natural gas industry something very, very different in terms of what they were pitching than what I heard from environmentalists in my neighborhood. And everybody was talking about this because the entire county was being leased. And then I discovered that it was actually 50% of New York State, 65% of Pennsylvania that was over this shale, half of Ohio, most of West Virginia, parts of Virginia, and that this was a really big deal. So I wanted to look into it, and that's how I started to make the film Gasland, which took me across the nation to about 25 different states. There are about 10 of them featured in the film, and it's a cross-country journey examining what happens in places where hydraulic fracturing, which is the type of gas drilling that they're using, comes in full bore.
And the film won the Sundance Festival this year.
Yeah, it won the special jury prize at Sundance, which was kind of amazing.
And is going to be shown on HBO tonight. Turning to you, Mike Sorahan, talk about how natural gas is extracted from shale.
Well, what he's saying is when you're doing shale, you use hydraulic fracturing. Now, this is a practice that has been used for decades in the industry. It's generally used, it's very commonly used, often to take a well that hasn't been producing much and stimulate it to produce more. When it comes to shale, there isn't really pockets that you can tap into or reservoirs. It's in the rock, and you have to kind of blow the rock apart. So you take tanker, you drill the well bore, and you take tanker loads of rock, or tanker loads of water. There's sand, and then there's the controversial part: these chemicals, a fairly small part that are still fairly key to, you know, what you'll be able to get out. And you pour it in there at high pressure, kind of, and break the rock apart. The rock escapes from the rock and goes up the wellbore.
The gas does.
I'm sorry. The gas escapes from the rock and goes up the wellbore, and that's how you get it out. And then what has opened up the Marcellus Shale and a lot of other shales, everybody knew there was gas in the shale, but it just wasn't worth getting out for a lot of industries. More than a decade ago, a guy in Texas figured out how to combine this fracturing with horizontal drilling. Before you would only fracture, you'd pour a wellbore or drill a wellbore straight down and fracture outward. This gentleman perfected drilling a wellbore down, turning it, and still being able to fracture, and that opened up shale drilling in the Marcellus and many other places in the country.
So that made it broader and broader, far more accessible for a company, and probably more economical for the company through this horizontal drilling.
It really made it possible. We were running out of natural gas in this country before this started getting more widespread. You had Alan Greenspan talking about we need to build more liquefied natural gas facilities to import it. Now some people say we could be an exporter because there's so much in these shales.
Josh Fox, you have witnessed this kind of hydraulic fracturing process. What about these chemicals that are going down into the ground injected with the fresh water to release the gas?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I kind of disagree with the characterization of the process that Mike just said. It is a new process. First he said that it wasn't a new process, and now he says that it was invented and combined with horizontal drilling. Hydraulic fracturing these days is happening at an incredibly high pressure rate and, to address your question, an incredible amount of chemical complexity. There are about 596 chemicals that we know about that make up 900 chemical products that go into the fracking fluid. They're infused in this water at very, very high amounts of water. It's between 2 and 7 million gallons of water per frack per well. So you're injecting this enormous amount of water, which is now a toxic fluid. A fracking fluid is categorized as one of the most hazardous wastes in America. And so you're taking that and infusing that into the landscape, using that to break apart these rocks, and then sucking a lot of that produced water, where they call it produced water after it comes out of the well, frack fluid, back out of the wellbore. You're only getting 25% of that fracking fluid back. So all of those 596 chemicals, which include carcinogens, neurotoxins, various chemicals of high toxicity, even in small concentrations, you're leaving that in the ground.
Josh,
so what's happening that I'm seeing here is these chemicals are turning up inexplicably, or explicably, depending on how you see it, in people's well water. And that's being documented in places where there's a lot of fracturing. You're also seeing migration of methane into people's well water. It's making their water flammable. They can light their water on fire at the tap, and this is a serious hazard in terms of people's houses could explode from that.
Josh Fox, he's director of the documentary film Gasland. It won the Special Jury Prize for Documentaries when it debuted at the Sundance Festival. It premieres on HBO tonight. Boyden Gray, turning to you, talk about the Energy Future Coalition. What is that?
It was started by Tim Worth, former Senator Tim Worth, John Podesta, and myself, and some others, Senator Daschle, Senator Sims, quite bipartisan, to promote clean energy and energy independence. It was triggered by 9/11 and the realization that we had to stop paying unsavory elements abroad for our oil, and that it would be better if we could find cleaner, more domestic sources for our consumption, both to generate electricity and to run our cars, trucks, and buses.
And what is, in your view, the potential for natural gas as a primary source of energy for this country in the future?
It's very big, potentially very, very big. First problem, of course, is you have to get it out safely. And I believe that can be done, but it costs more. And it's going to be something that adds to the cost of extraction and therefore requires a bigger demand for the result in order to justify the added expense of drilling. But assuming those problems can be solved, and that's, I think, not a huge assumption, but it is something we have to do, then I think the sky's the limit for natural gas for the next 30 or 40 years to displace foreign imported oil in our transportation system and to displace some of the dirtier coal.
Have you had your own concerns raised about reports of contamination of underground water, lighting, igniting of water coming out of faucets, potential for explosive material that appears in ordinary folks' homes?
Well, I've seen the film, and it's quite a film. My congratulations to the producer. What I don't understand is whether all of the film is just about fracturing, or does it also include coal bed methane gas, which is more of a risk at lower depths.
All right, and we'll talk about that when we come back. Boyden Gray is founding member of the Energy Future Coalition. We'll take your calls. Stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking about the process known as hydraulic fracturing or fracking, when gas companies bore down into the shale on various properties. And I said at the outset, my husband and I own a farm in the northeastern tip of Pennsylvania that is absolutely right here in this Marcellus Shale. Just before the break, Steve Boyden Gray, you asked Josh whether his film was concentrated just on this fractionating process or whether it was talking about coal as well.
Well, I assume it's just about the fracking. It's not a huge question, but I just was curious whether any of the instances that he photographed were the result of the shallower drilling in for coal bed methane.
It's a good question, and I think it points to my findings. What I found, and I can't qualify this, was an environmental catastrophe every place that I went. In every town that I went to, people had been overrun by the industry. Their water had been contaminated with various different ways, from the chemical contamination to the flammable water. There is a looming air problem with this drilling, which is that it vents off enormous volatile organic compounds into the atmosphere. So what I found, and we're talking about flammable water here, and fracking and coal bed methane is shallower than the shale drilling, it didn't seem to matter whether or not we were talking about shale, we were talking about coal beds, we were talking about tight sands. What we saw in every case was the fracking process at this enormous pressure was leading that kind of result, at least on the ground, because we had reports of flammable water in Dimock, and we know that that gas was coming from 8,000 feet down. We had flammable water in Colorado, and that may have been shallower, but that was following fracking incidents. We had flammable water in plastics and water in Wyoming, and those were at depths of 11,000 feet. In Australia, you have reports of flammable water, whole ponds that I've seen lit on fire because of the fracking. Divide Creek in Colorado is a well-known instance of a creek that you could light on fire. And we heard these reports in Canada, Texas, Louisiana, wherever the fracking seemed to be going. So for us, it was about hydraulic fracturing as this new technique at this higher pressure with this much greater chemical complexity. And I have to add, I don't know that it can be done safely. And if we're talking about our water supply, it seems to me that we have to apply the precautionary principle, because you can't clean an aquifer once you've contaminated it. And we need those aquifers to stay clean to provide us water forever. So even if you have 30 or 40 years worth of gas, it's still a bad deal, because you're potentially contaminating huge amounts of our underground water supply, and you can't clean that after a while.
Well, maybe I don't understand it well enough, but the drilling for the typical frack drilling is at depths well below the aquifers that we use for our water supply. They get the water independently of the drilling, or it comes from the depths that we don't normally use or rely on for for our water supply. Now, if what you're saying is no matter what happens, these fluids seep up from 11,000 feet up to 1,000 feet or 500 feet. I'm not aware of that, but that's what you're saying. And I think, you pose a very serious problem. But if the well is drilled correctly, the deep drilling doesn't touch the aquifers that we use.
You're absolutely right. It's not supposed to. And I can't tell you how this is happening. All I can tell you is that it is happening. We're in the process of what amounts to a massive experiment in doing this drilling. It hasn't been proven safe, and that you have it's this enormous quantity of wells going in, and the failure rate seems to be much greater than would be acceptable in another industry. So even if you have 100 wells and you have one that fails, you can have a huge water contamination incidents. And it seems like this is going on, well, from my investigation on the ground in all these different places. Everywhere I went, this is what I saw. And even if the water contamination issues could be fixed, the air pollution issues are really significant. When you drill for shale gas, you're actually producing more or on a par with coal, the amount of emissions, because they're venting off so much gas through those rigs, through the pipelines, the condensate tanks, the compressor stations, that it actually, when you're talking about shale gas, you're not any cleaner than coal.
Mike Sorahan, I'd like to bring you into this. You've done a fair amount of reporting on this. You've talked to residents on whose property this kind of drilling has taken place. What's been the reaction?
Well, a lot of it depends on whether people own their minerals and whether they did this willingly or whether they were sort of forced into this.
I want to talk about that, but go ahead.
There's a lot of people who are very happy to have made a great deal of money off of, say, a rural farm that, I don't know if it's profitable before, but now they're getting a great deal of money. There's other people who are very happy to have jobs going out and servicing these wells. As we're seeing in the Gulf, there's a lot of indirect economic impact, I guess is the right term, that ripples out. And there's a lot of people who feel that their water is in jeopardy, starting with, say, Mayor Bloomberg up in New York, who is very fearful that these chemicals that we're talking about will get into the New York City water supply. And, obviously that kind of makes your eyes boggle a little bit.
So what has Mayor Bloomberg decided thus far?
Well, it's Well, Mayor Bloomberg is kind of an advocate or a lobbyist in this circumstance, pressing on the New York
State legislature.
Well, the environmental regulators, and I don't want to get their department's name wrong, but the New York environmental regulators have said essentially by not setting up a drilling regime or a regulatory regime for the areas in the New York City watershed, they're not allowing it. At least at this point, they are allowing it in some other places, but they're not allowing it in the New York City watershed.
All right, Josh Fox, I want to ask you about so-called forced pooling and how this could increase pressure to force landowners in Pennsylvania to lease their mineral rights.
Well, what forced pooling is, it's different in every state, but generally, if you have a 1,200-acre parcel of land and 60% of the landowners of that 1,200-acre parcel have leased, that means that the gas companies are allowed to get the gas out from under everybody. Essentially, everybody's sort of leased at that point. Pennsylvania actually doesn't have forced pooling. Last I heard, they were contemplating trading a forced pooling provision in the legislature for a severance tax. Pennsylvania doesn't have a severance tax on gas. New York does have forced pooling. So if there were 60% of landowners in a 1,200-acre parcel, yes, those other 40% would be essentially forced to allow the gas to be extracted at the state minimum. At that point, they might be compelled to sign a lease by the gas companies. But I would say they shouldn't sign. I would say to no one they should sign a lease at this point. Even if you were forced pooled, I don't think you should sign a lease because then you would be liable for the damages. And if you didn't sign a lease, you wouldn't be liable for the damages.
Orton Gray, talk about this forced pooling and why it makes sense for the gas companies to have this kind of pooling.
Well, it makes sense to have it, but I don't think that they can force a landowner to sign. I may be wrong. Maybe I don't understand the law, and I'm not an expert on Pennsylvania law. They do not have a severance tax. I'm not sure, though, I know what that has to do precisely with this. But I don't think a landowner can be forced to subject himself to liability to a well that's not going to be properly drilled.
Josh, is it other states that currently have this kind of forced pooling?
Yeah, it's called compulsory integration as well. In the West, the situation is even more complicated because they have what's called split estate. A lot of landowners don't actually own their mineral rights. Their mineral rights were sold 100 years ago to a major corporation or to a wealthy landowner, and when they bought their land, they didn't have the mineral rights, and that's fairly common. So in that case, the gas companies just roll up one day and say, all right, well, we're drilling our well over here, and we're going to have our man camp where 12 people are living over there, and the landowners have no say in that at all. If they're lucky, they could get a surface use agreement which has certain provisions in it. But in one of the cases in the film, Dee Hoffmeister, who suffered exposure to a toxic cloud, she was coming home from her 50th wedding anniversary, and she was enveloped in this cloud that was in her house at a nearby fracking job. She was force pooled, and then the gas company said to her, well, we're going to take the gas out from under you anyway, so you might as well sign and get a little bit of money for it. So it's not about, you can't force somebody to do it, but they will take the gas out. And they do very aggressively say, we're going to take your gas anyway, so you might as well sign.
All right, let's take a caller in Henrietta, New York. Good morning, Joe. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm concerned about this water that may filter up, but drinking it is bad enough. But what if it gets into the irrigation and into our food crops and we're eating some of these horrible chemicals?
Josh.
Well, I've seen this. And heard reports of, there are also a lot of spills that happen. There are spills, there was an 8,000-gallon spill in Dimmock that went directly into a creek. Spills are fairly widespread. There was a well that, three wells that blew out in western Pennsylvania earlier last week that spilled 1 million gallons of fracking fluid down a mountain. In one case in Colorado that I was at a guy's named Rick Rolls' house, and they had a manifold that was open and all the fracking fluid was spilling down into the irrigation ditches. I mean, these wells, and you have to have a clear picture of this, and if you watch the film tonight, you will. They're in the middle of our farmlands. They're everywhere. They're in near hospitals. There are 10,000 of them in Fort Worth, in the Fort Worth area. You have them everywhere. So they're in the middle of our agricultural fields. One of the most weird things and very scary that I saw are when the produced water comes back up out of the well, it's held in a pit. And those pits leak. They have faulty pit liners. In some cases, they don't have pit liners. And in other cases, they have an evaporation sprayer directly in the middle of the pit, which is spraying that fracking fluid into the sunlight so it evaporates faster. And, of course, a lot of that's blowing down onto grasslands, onto farms. The pollution from this is rampant and unregulated. And I have to say that this is all new information for most people. It's fairly shocking. And it was astounding to me as I went ahead and documented this going across the country.
Josh Fox, his film Gasland will be shown on HBI this evening. And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Joining us now by phone from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, is the Secretary of Pennsylvania's Department of Environmental Protection, John Hanger. Good morning, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Appreciate you having me.
Please talk about how fast drilling is expanding in Pennsylvania.
Well, Pennsylvania had its first application for a Marcellus well in 2005. At this point, there are about 1,500 wells drilled in Marcellus wells drilled in Pennsylvania. Of course, the oil industry literally in North America started in Pennsylvania shortly before the Civil War, with the first oil well being drilled here. So we've had gas drilling in Pennsylvania for a very long time, but we have not had drilling to these depths and with the pressures that are now typical in a Marcellus well.
And I gather you have about 5,000 applications for 2010.
Well, that was an estimate of what we thought would likely be received by the agency in this year. Actually, quite a number of the applications that are granted never lead to an actual well. The permits are good for a year. But it's certainly true that this industry is growing. It's growing significantly. And it is producing or will be producing a great deal of natural gas. I want to emphasize that Governor Rendell has ordered that the Department of Environmental Protection increase the staffing considerably. We've actually more than doubled our staffing here in Pennsylvania, and I really doubt any other state could say such a thing. We've added 37 employees to our gas staff who do nothing but work on these issues in 2009. Right now we're hiring another 68. Employees to do that. Also reviewing our rules and regulations that have been in place a long time in Pennsylvania, because gas drilling is not new to Pennsylvania.
So the question becomes, just how safe is the process for drilling for shale gas, and whether there are any documented cases of groundwater contamination?
Well, those are a number of questions within one, really, there. And let me try to provide a reasonable answer in a short period of time. The gas drilling is absolutely an industrial activity. A Marcellus well, in particular, is a major piece of industrial activity. Even when it is done very well, there will be some impacts on land simply to prepare the well. There's likely to be some impacts on water, and there will be some emissions to the air. There's no such thing as zero-impact drilling, though sometimes reading the annual reports of some companies, you would think there is, because they tend to highlight very green and good-looking pictures there. But gas drilling, even when done well, has some impacts. Of course, when it's done less than well, those impacts increase. Our function is to try to reduce the impacts as much as possible, and of course, and get the natural gas, which is a good product because it's cleaner burning than the alternatives that are often used.
All right, we have just a few seconds left. I'm just wondering about the situation in Dimmock, Pennsylvania.
Right.
What was the problem there?
The problem there was that gas itself migrated as a result of wells that were drilled by a company called Cabot that were, in fact, substandard. The frack fluids did not migrate there. But gas, it migrated, and gas migrating is a serious problem. It is indeed dangerous. I don't mean to minimize what happened there.
I wonder, Mr. Hanger, we've got to take just a short break here. Would you be good enough to stay on the line with us? When
sure.
we come back, we'll talk further and take your calls, 800-433-8850.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world. On the web at Hewlett.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, James Murphy, founder of the dance indie rock band LCD Sound System, on why he stopped complaining about other bands and decided to start his own. His new album is called This Is Happening. Join us.
And welcome back. We're talking about the process of hydraulic fracturing or fracking in Pennsylvania, New York, in Oklahoma, elsewhere across the country. With us on the line, Josh Fox. He's director of a documentary film called Gasland. It debuted at Sundance Festival, premieres on HBO tonight. Here in the studio, Mike Sorahan, a reporter for E&E Publishing, C. Boyden Gray, founding member of the Energy Future Coalition, and also on the line, John Hanger. He's secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. I do hope all can stay with us as we take a call from Victoria in Dimmock, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, please.
Pardon me?
Go right ahead, please.
Yes, well, I spoke with you previously when you had Professor Engelder on, and I gave you an update on Dimmock then, but... You know, things are not good out here. The secretary said something about no contamination of fracking fluids, but I'm looking at a newspaper article of citing numerous incidents of waste fluids impacting the waters of the Commonwealth, and eventually that will get into the drinking water. The Scranton Times did a huge expose on all the incidents that come along with this industry. And I have to point out that the fracking fluids, yes, that's a very serious aspect, but it's the daily housekeeping, it's the daily activities of these gas companies, the spills, the diesel, the chemicals that are transported. As the Secretary said, it is an industrialization, and I just don't think the people of rural Appalachia are prepared for the extent of what is going to happen to their environment, to their surroundings.
All right. Victoria, may I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
Did you sign up with a particular company? Did you sign an agreement to have this company come on to your property and drill?
I'm glad you asked that question. Yes, I signed a lease in 2006 with Cabot Oil and Gas. And as many people out here can tell you, they don't tell you the true nature of their business. They don't tell you that it's a dangerous industrialization of your community. In fact, the landman told us there would be maybe one gas well drilled out here. There might be gas. And we would be patriotic if we helped get this natural gas flowing. And since we already had the Tennessee Valley Pipeline going through here, we thought, one well, we have the pipeline, that's the story. We all help out. Well, within a year, we had 27 wells drilled. When I met Secretary Hanger in November of 2008, and I mentioned Dimmick to him at that point, he did not even know that we were drilling. We now have over 60 wells in a 9-square-mile area, and more to come.
Secretary Hanger, can you respond, please?
Sure. Well, first, let me be clear about a couple things. In Pennsylvania, there have been too many spills. There have been too many leaks of pits, and there's been too much gas migrating. I'm not pleased with the performance of the industry. But it's also very, very important to understand some of these terms. In Pennsylvania so far have not had a case that we've documented where the frack fluids that went down in the drilling process came back up and contaminated people's water. We've had gas migrate that has contaminated people's water, and that's a very serious problem. We've had spills at the surface that have contaminated streams, and that's a very serious problem. What I'm trying to do is make sure that the information provided here is accurate. I accept and agree with the basic point that this industry must be tightly regulated. It must be do much better than it's doing right now, or it's going to create a public backlash. It is in the process, in my judgment, of losing public confidence because of its inability to actually be world class. At the end of the day, government has an essential role. It can encourage that world-class culture, or it can discourage it, but we can't actually make it. That has to come out of the top management all the way down to the person on the rig, who are, after all, the only people who are on site 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
All right. Josh Fox, I think you wanted to comment.
I actually really do. As far as the documented cases of gas drilling, frack fluids, there's a distinction being made here between frack fluids and drilling muds. Drilling muds are fluids that are injected down through the wellbore, and those have been seen. Those are like barium, strontium, aluminum. Those have been turning up in documented water tests, as well as the fact that this substandard issue and how the industry is doing. New York State right now is in the process of leading the nation. There are two moratorium bills on the floor of the state legislature in New York being voted on this week, and that shows that New York has no confidence in this industry, at least to a point to which they're debating it very seriously, and we hope that moratorium passes. But in terms of this standard of drilling, I haven't seen it. I do think it's fictional. I think that if there is a standard, it is something that the industry is saying, like Victoria mentioned, that is what they promise to achieve. But in every place that I've been, they're not achieving it.
All
I also
right.
might add that they're exempt from our major environmental laws. They're exempt for hydraulic fracturing from the Safe Drinking Water Act, from the Clean Water Act, from the Clean Air Act, the Superfund law, which regulates
cleanup.
And
how did that happen, Josh?
Well, in 2005, the Bush-Cheney administration drafted their Energy Policy Act, and they slipped in what's called the Halliburton loophole. That exempts hydraulic fracturing specifically from reporting requirements of the Safe Drinking Water Act, which monitors underground injection of toxins. That passed in 2005 in the Republican-controlled Congress. There's currently an act to correct it. It's called the Frack Act, and that's on the floor. That's in the Waxman's Energy Committee right now. It's got 57 co-sponsors in the House and 12 in the Senate.
All right, and back to you, Secretary Hanger. Considering the fact that New York is considering a moratorium, whereas Pennsylvania is considering tightening regulations, does that affect your thinking at all?
Well, just a couple of things first. At least in Pennsylvania, this industry is not exempt from the Clean Air Act. I can assure you that. The Halliburton loophole for the Safe Drinking Water standard is something that is true, and it creates, understandably, a lot of suspicion. I don't understand why the industry did that, but they did, and that was is creating the suspicion that Josh points to. In terms of where Pennsylvania is, this governor and I support a moratorium on drilling on our public lands. We have, in fact, done enough drilling on our public lands. In terms of the private lands, we are not yet favoring a moratorium because there's substantial benefits associated with the natural gas production. But I have to say that this industry needs to look in the mirror and be much more effective in keeping its promises and not simply making those nice words. And at the end of the day, the regulations have to, in fact, be more aggressive. But if this industry continues to have too many spills, too many leaks, too much gas migrating, they are going to lose the public confidence, and they will lose this democracy.
I want to go back to something you said about the drinking water, Secretary Hanger, and turn to Josh Fox on that question. Have you, in your documentary filmmaking, come across contaminated drinking water? I certainly recall seeing inflammable drinking water coming out of faucets out in the West. But what about in Pennsylvania?
Well, the contamination, again, this is why we're calling for an extensive investigation and a moratorium. In terms of drinking water in Pennsylvania, endemic in particular, in Hickory, where they're drilling out west, yes, the answer is yes. Kids have been made sick by this water. It's been reported. There is unsafe levels of certain toxins. I can't quote for you right now, specifically in Pennsylvania, because the EPA has been taken off the job. The only place the EPA has been actively investigating this process right now is in Pavilion, Wyoming, where they have found 2BE in people's wells, glycol ether in people's wells. I saw this. Glycol ethers is a liquid chemical component of plastic that they use as an antifreeze in the wellbore. And in Wyoming, at Lewis Meeks's house, one gentleman that I interview in the film, he actually burns his water with a blowtorch, and you see this chemical film, this plastic film, developing on the surface. When you smell that water, it smells like turpentine. So in terms of the EPA actually investigating and doing a thorough examination of where how these chemicals are migrating, I can only point to that case in Wyoming, but then again, that is the only place where there has been this extensive kind of examination. And they did find those chemicals in 11 of the 44 water wells that they examined.
Okay, I'm going to go now to Syracuse, New York. Good morning, Donald. You're on the air.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Excuse me, sir. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm off the speakerphone.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet. I teach groundwater hydrology and water chemistry here at Syracuse University, and I've been involved in the shale bed methane issue here. Basically, I've offered my views to the public and the regulatory industries. To be honest, it seems to me Mr. Fox cobbled together every produced gas problem across the country that had major emotional and visual impact into a kind of frightening storyline that doesn't tell the true story. He coupled together wet gas and dry gas, gas found over crude oil, methane from coal, methane from shale. And to be true, all these different gas development procedures involve different science, technology, and geology. Now, I admit there have been some well failures, such as Dimock, it's terrible. I also have seen water on fire, and there are occasional accidents, and some gas companies like Cabot haven't been good citizens. But, you know, even a local ABC reporter here who interviewed me and saw the film came to the same conclusion that I did, that Fox selectively picked the most visual stories he could find and chose not to address any of the serious science related to the process by even asking serious scientists about their views.
All right, Josh.
Well, that's also not true. The serious scientists that we have talked to are people at the EPA. We have Wilma Subra, who is a MacArthur Genius Award-winning chemist in Louisiana. There's Dr. Theo Colborne, who is an internationally recognized chemical expert who has been pioneering in terms of identifying the fracking fluids, many of which are proprietary. And, I mean, the question of whether or not I was cherry-picking cases, I would arrive in a town where this was going on, and the citizens would literally be pouring out stories from every corner of these towns. We're receiving thousands upon thousands of emails with testimonials, so much so that we're developing a national registry at our website for these horror stories. And we're asking people to upload those stories to our website with photographs, with videos, and that will be a component of our website, gaslandthemovie.com, in a few weeks. But the notion that I'm somehow sensationalizing this, it was never my premise. I was offered $100,000. I was trying to find out the truth. And when I did arrive in these places where the drilling was happening in force, the impact on your senses and on your emotions is incredible. And the sense of betrayal that people have is palpable. And that is why it is a very emotional film. And it is a very shocking film. But it's not because we were cherry-picking the worst-case scenario. When I went to these places, it was the worst-case scenario.
Boyd and Gray, you too have seen the film. What was your reaction?
Well, I thought the film was very effective, but as the caller from Syracuse said, you know, is there cherry-picking? How much of this is really representative of what's happening in this particular kind of drilling, gas shale, as opposed to the other forms of drilling? And I'm not convinced that this is systemic, but I will say this, that there are drillers and contractors who know how to do it, who know how to do it right. I believe Ted Turner, for example, has it done right on his acreage out in the West, and it can be done without disrupting the community and without creating air pollution or water pollution. But that costs money, and it requires industry standards, and I am willing to not just acknowledge but to fear that we don't have yet the industry standard that we'll have to develop.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I want our listeners to know that we did invite the EPA onto the program to comment on the risk to drinking water. They declined, but they did give us the following statement. Quote, natural gas plays a key role in our nation's clean energy future, and the process known as hydraulic fracturing is one way of accessing that vital resource. But there are serious questions about whether the process of hydraulic fracturing impacts drinking water, human health, and the environment, and further study is warranted to address those concerns. EPA announced in March it will study the potential adverse impact that hydraulic fracturing may have on drinking water. Joshua, do you think that is satisfactory to your concerns?
Well, it remains to be seen. The EPA study is only 2 years. It's funded at $1.8 million for the first year. The second year's funding is not complete. I have questions about it. It's only an ecological study. We don't have a health impact assessment as part of that study, and I think that's definitely something we need. And I would add that we probably need it from an independent university, and that would I think, and my advisors have said that we have enough cases out there of real health impact to do epidemiology, and it's about time that we should. And I don't want to harp on this, but I do want to mention that I did travel to 25 different states. There are 10 different states highlighted in the film. And if, you know, the process of fracking, whether it was in a shale formation or a coal bed formation, seemed to be what was problematic in every state,
all right,
in every geology.
And we're out of time. Josh Fox, he's director of the documentary film Gasland. It premieres on HBO tonight. Mike Sorahan is a reporter for E&E Publishing. C. Boyden Gray is founding member of the Energy Future Coalition. And John Hanger, secretary of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection. Thank you all very, very much. We shall continue to watch this subject. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.